Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the work session for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, January the 5th, 2016. I currently have 6 p.m. I'd like to call our work session to order and welcome all of our distinguished guests who are here to honor our returning council members and also new council members. We'd like to welcome in our ranks, welcome back Jenny Reese as a council member, and also Mike Geddes, former council members, now council members again, and also welcome Ben Bailey. And so we are going to give them the oath of office and be sworn in as newly elected officials by our city recorder, Colleen Mulvey. So Ms. Mulvey, if you want to proceed, I'm ready. Pardon me?
Yeah.
I like that.
Jenny, we'll start with you, if that's all right.
Do you mind if I go last because my family's coming?
Oh, okay, sure. Okay. Ben, your family's here?
And they are here. First? Sure.
Okay. Come on over here. And you guys can feel free to take pictures or whatever you want. Of Ben, not me.
I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States, and the laws and ordinances of the City of Cedar Hills,
of my office with fidelity.
Mike, is your family here? Yep. Okay.
It's going to be here, I think.
Do solemnly swear
that I will support, obey, and defend
the Constitution of the United States,
the Constitution of this state,
and the laws and ordinances of the City of Cedar Hills,
and that I will discharge the duties
of my office
with fidelity.
Thank you. The only item we have on our work session agenda tonight is going to exec session to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation. So the council member would like to make a motion. I will take that now.
I'll move that we'll
go into executive session pursuant to Utah State Code 52-4-204 and 52-4-205-1C to discuss pending or reasonably imminent litigation here in the basement of the Community Recreation Center.
Thank you. So I have a motion. Is there a second?
I'd second that.
Motion was seconded by Mr. Geddes. Have a vote starting from my left. Mr. Bailey?
Yes.
Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Mr. Geddes?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Mr. Crawley is not here, so we will go to exec session now. Thank you very much. Okay, so if you look at your agenda, you'll see on scheduled items number 11 and 12. 11 is a discussion on driving range fence. The other one is a discussion on city code relating to zoning and development. Item number 12, I think, will be a recurring item, which will come back over the next.
Item 12 is actually.
Pardon me?
I don't know, I don't show 12, but I do have the.
It's on the agenda. There's just a separate.
Yeah, it's a commercial development guidelines. It's on there. Sorry, I don't know.
It's on the agenda, though.
There's
an amendment for it.
Yeah, there's an amended agenda that I'm looking at. I think it's the most current one.
It's right here.
So.
Oh, there. Okay, I got it.
You got it?
Yep.
All right. So, David, is Greg going to be presenting during council meeting on the fence, or are you going to be doing that?
Greg will be here, yeah.
Okay. And so he's not in the building, is he?
I believe he is.
Let's see if we can get him to come down. In the meantime, while we're waiting for that, Daniel? You and Jenny had asked for this to be on the agenda. You want to start us off in terms of what you're thinking about on city code? And by the way, prior to our off-site meeting on the 30th, on the 29th, it looks like we're going to be getting together from 9 to 3 to talk specifically about zoning and code-related items. So we'll spend a lot of time then, but we want to make sure that we've got 6 months in order to get our code, zoning ordinances, planning.
Well, we only have 4 months.
General plan, all of that taken care of.
We only have 4 months left.
4 months left.
2 months is already gone.
At the conclusion of that sentence, yeah. I was going to say from the point at which we started.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, anyways.
All right, so... I've made a list of things I feel like we need to address as we're revising our commercial development guidelines and our zoning ordinances, and I'll share this document with you. But I think probably the best place to start with our discussion tonight is that we need to be thinking about zone boundaries, whether we want to have one commercial zone with separate sub-districts in it like we do now, whether we instead want to have separate zones, which is essentially what these sub-districts are, is separate zones, and maybe we should codify them explicitly as separate zones. We can do what are called overlay zones, where we say, hey, we have a single commercial zone, but we're going to overlay it with a certain area that's allowed to have certain uses, and they're not allowed in other areas. So I think we need to figure out those boundaries and the uses in each zone. So which uses would explicitly be allowed, and which would be conditional, and which would be, you know, the remainder would then be prohibited.
So how do you want to handle this discussion on whether we should change zones or keep them the same? I mean, do you have an idea or a proposition that you have, or you just want to kick off the discussion and come up with a good decision?
It's a good question. So if everybody's familiar with the road that's going to go in across from Walmart, I think we call that 4700 West? 4600 West?
Mm-hmm.
4600.
Or is it
47?
Okay.
4600. Yeah. Is
4600 is, okay. Yeah. So 4700 West will go across from Walmart and straight through the remainder of our commercial zone. And it's my belief that we ought to require commercial development on both sides of that road, both east and west. And I think we're all in agreement that we ought to have commercial surrounding arts and eventually on the city-owned property once that's sold. And so in my mind, we really have two issues with respect to zoning. One is, should the easternmost part of the land currently owned by the Smarts, should that have a different use in it? Should we allow that to have some residential uses? Should it be townhomes? Should it be offices? Do we expect that that would be commercial in the long run, and so we should hold on to it and keep it as commercial and just say, no, we really want commercial here, and we're willing to wait 20 years if that's what it takes. Eventually the valley will be built out and we'll get commercial there. Or should we set our sights different and say, no, we're willing to accept some office or residential there? That's issue number one in my mind. And then issue number two is, what kind of a buffer should we have between the existing single-family homes and that commercial development? The Planning Commission gave us a recommendation of expanding that. There's currently a buffer of, I believe, is it 15 feet, David?
30
feet in the current development guidelines. They talked about it going to 45 or maybe 60 feet.
45
feet. So we ought to talk about what kind of buffer we feel like we need between their homes and between commercial development. And we need to, I lied, there's not two issues, there's three. In my mind, the third issue is what kind of non-commercial uses might be allowed in the commercial zone. Right now, we have recreational and public facilities being allowed there. So if we ever wanted to build a splash pad, if we wanted an ice rink as part of a commercial development, if residents decided they wanted to vote for a bond and wanted to build a pool, do we want those kinds of facilities built there, or would we rather it be strictly commercial? And I would love to hear opinions from the council on...
So you don't have a proposition yet?
My proposition would be that I think we probably ought to allow at least office uses on the eastern portion of the Smarts parcel. I'd be open certainly to mixed use throughout the commercial zone if residential was on the second floor and above, if someone wanted to do that. I don't know that I'm ready to have pure residential anywhere, potentially in the easternmost portion apart from across from the Charleston. I might be ready for that.
So did you just say that you'd be open to office space at the easternmost point?
Uh-huh.
Don't we already allow that?
Yes.
Okay.
But I wouldn't allow it elsewhere. Right? And so that's why when I talk about redrawing the boundaries, I would draw a nice healthy boundary around 4700 West, the new road that's going to be put in, and say, look, bordering that road, we ought to expect commercial should be able to come in there. It's
commercial
right across from the
commercial.
Walmart. Yeah, commercial only. So my preference is to maximize the amount of commercial development, and only where we feel like commercial has a low chance of coming in would we allow other uses there.
How far on the east side of that 4700 West Road are you going to create a buffer zone? Because that's still at the westernmost part of the SWART property.
I would want to get help from a developer who might tell us what is a typical commercial lot depth. And let's make that a standard commercial development lot depth that would provide room for a pad and for parking, and map that out. And hopefully that would then leave enough room for another use in if we're going to designate a non-commercial or an office allowed area in the rest of the zone.
Okay. Any other council members have any thoughts on this?
Mine are the same, just that I'd love to get this discussion going. I'm feeling a time crunch with only 4 months left, so we've already lost 2 months. I have actually pulled some of the code from a few other cities, and I put it in a Word document, and I'm going to print that to PDF and send it to you guys if you want to just get an example of what I think some other cities have done a really good job of being very specific and putting a lot of detail into their zoning laws and into their general plan. And so I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel. We can look at what other cities are doing and copy what makes sense for us. But I'd love to have those discussions early on, so that way by the time April comes, it's approved by all of us, we're all on board, and we can implement it.
Okay. So I feel that sense of urgency on this as well. And in as much as we only meet every 2 weeks, then I have a suggestion. I'd like to meet weekly with two other council members, and I don't care if we rotate that for people who want to participate, but I'd like to start hashing out every single week thoughts on this and then bring those thoughts back to the council during work session or council meeting on the weeks after we've hashed it out. Would that work with some people? Daniel, you have an interest in this?
I have a very strong interest in this.
So can you make time once a week?
Absolutely.
And so I meet Thursday mornings for mayor's hours from 8 until 10.
And I can't do Tuesdays or Thursdays.
Tuesdays or Thursdays.
I can do Fridays especially good.
Okay.
I can do Friday mornings.
Early in the morning.
Happy to do early.
Okay. And Jenny, if we were to pull you in some Friday mornings, are you working Friday?
The funny thing is that Tuesdays and Thursdays are the only days I don't work.
And those are the days that I have three classes I teach. And so
yeah.
So
maybe it has to be Daniel and someone else or something.
Okay. So Fridays will not work for you. Mike, how are your Friday mornings?
Generally can be made available.
Ben, how are your Friday mornings?
I'm good with Friday mornings.
Okay. Then I think Daniel and I will be permanent members of this ad hoc group that gets together, and then we'll pull in council members. And if we need to meet maybe late on a Friday afternoon in order to bring Jenny in, I imagine you can do that, right, Daniel? And
oh, yeah.
I imagine Jenny, you may be able to work that.
Yes.
As well.
I can do a Thursday at 5 or 5:30.
Okay. I can do that generally too, except for this Thursday.
Yeah.
So the first Thursdays are out every month. In the afternoon. Okay, so I'll send out an email then suggesting a time for this Friday morning. And so I'm going to start with you, Mr. Geddes, if that's okay.
This Friday?
Uh-huh.
I'm out of town.
And I'm going to start with Ben.
I'll be there.
So.
What time?
I'll work that out. I need to take a look at my schedule, make sure I don't have any conflicts. But it'll be in the morning, probably early, after shortly after 9 o'clock.
Okay.
All right. Greg, I'm going to give you about 5 minutes if you can. And just tell us, I know you're going to be coming back during council meeting to talk about the driving range fence issues. Maybe just give us some of your thoughts now. Tee it up for when we come back later.
You betcha. In the past, you had asked us to do some homework and get some numbers for a couple of different options. A couple of the options were, what would it cost to install some cameras? What would it cost to have additional employees to monitor the driving range? And then additional netting options. And we have got bids for everything so far. To install some cameras down at the driving range. I don't know if you can all see that, but that's kind of the option they gave us. It's more of a solar type of a camera. We could get two cameras down there that have a 5-year warranty. It would require some maintenance every 4 to 6 months. It would be $6,450. The payroll really does just, I mean, it's your call, but it doesn't make any sense. It comes down, it's about $35,000 a year if you add it up. If you're talking from somebody there from the beginning of the day till the end of the day, which the driving range is open. So to have it staffed, that's just based off of somebody that's making $8 an hour from daylight hours from February through November. And it's a little bit flexible. It really is dependent, just like the golf course is, on weather. Maybe we're not open February. Maybe we save that $2,400 during February.
And do these cameras, do they send video back to the golf clubhouse so it can be monitored?
We could monitor it from there.
Okay, so it's not,
but again, you're having somebody that's not going to look at it all the time because they're going to be dealing with a customer.
Oh, sure.
Typically we have that one person.
But it's there so you can monitor it.
I don't know about the recording. I'd have to ask Wade on that. I assume it would be. It would have a DVR or something that would store it to be recorded. It would make sense.
Ideally it would just record it to a hard drive.
Yeah.
And it would cycle through.
Yeah, and it depends on what kind it is. Sometimes they'll save, you know, up to a week. Sometimes they'll save longer. It just depends on how big that DVR is.
Sometimes the very effect of having a camera there, whether it's recording something or not,
right,
can deter people from doing things. And so that's an option as well. Is
Absolutely.
It not?
Yeah.
What are some other options in terms of deterring this without actually putting
additional
new poles, new fence?
Well, last time we talked, we did talk about maybe switching the tee boxes. It just doesn't make sense. I think that brings into a different safety element for the golfers. And I know last time, I believe it was the Hart family, they had mentioned that they had talked to Riverside Country Club, and they had increase the height of their net. We actually called Riverside. They didn't. BYU actually paid for that to protect their own investment that's on the outside of that. So it wasn't something that the club itself did. Yeah. So, and we actually contacted. We use the same manufacturer that does the netting too. They wouldn't even give us whatever that bid was either. So, and one of the main things that they wanted to emphasize to us, and actually we contacted the company West Coast Netting, who did the last time, as well as Niels Fugel, who installed our poles, and they both recommend you do not want to stick an additional arm on that existing arm up high because of the wind element here. It's really not going to work. It's going to knock it over. It doesn't make any sense. So that was their recommendation.
What about other measures in order to discourage errant or malicious golfers, like forcing them to the right side?
Yeah. We can do that. We actually went down there. You know, the funny thing is after we talked about it last time, it's been a long time since I've been down there. I was telling David this too. I actually went down there one day on a Saturday because our superintendent called me and he got a new driver and he wanted me to come hit a couple balls with him. And honestly, anywhere I was even at, there's such a simple possibility to hit a ball out there. So
there's
even
an ample opportunity.
Very, yeah. Very easily. I mean, a good golfer.
Even from the far right side?
Yeah. Yeah. Because what happens is with the width, as you take the ball off, it's going to continue to rise where ours are, and it'll continue to rise. And by the time it hits there, it's perfectly at that height. If you've got a slice, if you're a right-handed golfer, that ball's just going to take off and go.
I could test that really well for you.
I've done it for you. And I consider myself an okay golfer. I'm not a great golfer. But I can tell you, I probably hit 8 balls out there myself. So there's no doubt there's an issue. One of the other issues that we actually asked them, too, is can the homeowner put up their own net on their own property? So we actually got a bid for that, too. So they could do that. The bid for them would be my notes here. $8,100 is what it would cost for them to do it. It would be 3 poles, 15 feet high, which would cover.
Did you say $8,100?
$8,100 is what it would cost for them. That's a 60 foot wide, so it's pretty much the size of their thing. Now, if y'all chose to do something ourselves, if they were here and we were doing something ourselves, they said that price would go down because they're obviously already on site. So they would help reduce the scope of that price a little bit. But, you know, I've mentioned this many times, it's really isn't the responsibility of ours. And so from our perspective, we do the best we can. We monitor it ultimately, and we've got the signs posted. We've ordered new signs. They're on our scorecards. They're all over that. It's the responsibility of the golfer. You know, it's the law of consequence. I mean, if somebody else on 16 or whoever else has a ball hit in their yard, it could open that up for them. And I know Mr. Shaw, I might be speaking out of turn here. I know David and I talked the other day, and he said that you have experience with Murray City, having worked with this before, their golf course.
Yeah, Murray City. Murray Parkway has basically 3 main roads that surround the golf course, 4 if you count the one that's harder to hit. And so we would get broken windshields from time to time. The city's policy was simply to pay for the windshield because it wasn't worth the litigation factor, and we had people threaten to sue all the time over it. And it was cheaper to pay $200 or $300 for a windshield than it was to risk that.
But they had a dollar amount, right?
They wouldn't hit more than 500 per
inch. Right. And some of the damage, if you think about it from a driving range, the distance of there, if that could do a lot more than that with a dent on a car hood. We've seen that in the past,
too. I mean, I remember BMW came up when I was up there, so you've been hit.
Yeah.
And so that's a great question, right, is without having this protection, if we know golf balls are going over all the time, what's our liability when it hits someone at the park or in their backyard? That's going to be an expensive thing for us to fight as well and defend against.
It would be, yes.
So those are at least just some of the options that we've got and we found based upon what you had asked us to do.
Did you say there wouldn't be liability for us?
No, I said it would be expensive just to defend it. Whether we ultimately are exonerated or not, the cost to defend would be pricey.
So how does that work when you go to a baseball diamond and you get hit by a baseball, your car, which my car has? I mean, isn't there liability to someone there?
There's potential liability. Yeah.
There's potential liability everywhere. That's my point. Is that there's no way to ensure that everyone's life is safe all of the time.
Well, that's right. But that's another way to look at it. Is this an insurable risk? And I don't know if we've explored that at all, but perhaps it is.
Do other cities insure? Do you know?
You know, I don't.
Other than self-insure, I'm sure Murray just paid it off.
Yeah, my experience with golf courses in particular was with Murray. And so I don't know beyond that. Murray self-insures everything. And so that's not a good example of an outside insurance.
One example of that is when this all went down, if you remember the situation. And there was somebody that reached out to Hobble Creek, and they said that they did a lot of things. One of the things that they specifically said is it's up to their lawyer. You know, their lawyer on a case-by-case basis decides whether they're going to cover that or not. So it's out of their hands, they said. It's something that's worked out on the side.
What does Fox Hollow do? They've got a fairly busy road next to one of their
right.
holes. And I can remember as a kid golfing there, hitting them over accidentally. But,
oh, you're talking the ones on like coming up the road there.
Yeah, coming up the road. Yeah. But I mean,
yeah. So that's where Wade came from, and so that's Wade kind of has had that same policy from Fox Hollow. Again, they don't do anything. It's the golfer's responsibility.
I honestly think that's the safest.
Well, and you find that pretty much everywhere. I mean, you're going to find the select few courses here and there that probably are a little bit more prominent, prestigious, that might go that extra thing for a customer service aspect. And, you know, again, it's your decision ultimately.
Yeah. So what instructions, if any, are given to golfers when they go down to use the driving range? Knowing, because every time I bring this up with staff, I hear that there are some golfers that maliciously try and knock it over the fence. So when you guys send people down, is there any instruction that is specifically made to every golfer that says, you know, we're watching you?
No.
Do you think that would be helpful?
It would take a lot of time because you think about it, you're selling them a token. They're going out and putting the token in the machine. I think the better thing to do, I think a good thing we could do, is come up with some bullet points, laminate it, put it on the outside of the machine, because then they're getting to that next golfer.
So what? Maybe I'm not stating this correctly. What's wrong with telling the golfers as you're taking their money or giving them a token and saying, we have a problem with people down there accidentally or on purpose hitting the ball over the fence. We want you to be particularly careful in terms of how you're golfing if you can. And by the way, you know, we're going to try and watch this. So, and maybe that's a conversation that's directed more towards teenagers.
Yeah.
But it seems as if the golf staff maybe should consider saying to every single golfer that goes down there,
well, because I think your second part of that could be more accurate. I think because if you say that to every person that goes down there, they're going to feel like you're accusing them of doing something.
Depends,
and I can see that coming across.
I think it depends on how you say it.
I agree with that. But at the same time, a lot of times we have to remember we have teenage kids behind that desk. So sometimes that perception can come across the wrong way. And I'm not saying we can't do something, because we could. Personally, I like the bullet point. When they slide that thing in, they're looking at it with a different colored sheet that says, these are some things we ask you to do.
That's fine, but I think it's even stronger when something is verbally said. And if you want to come up with a way to say it that's nicely, saying, we have a problem, I need your help. Here's our problem. Can you help us out? Okay. People are more apt to cooperate when you say, I have a problem, I need your help, as opposed to, don't do this. Do you know what I'm saying?
And granted, yeah, we have a problem, but we also have a problem on the golf course. So, I mean, you could open that can of worms with that.
Right, but we have a situation where there's a homeowner who's building a home who's complaining about the driving range. That's the issue we're dealing with right now. So,
Greg, I completely agree with the mayor here. You know, just a simple, hey, please try to keep your golf balls on the driving range.
Sure.
And have a great time out there. I think that would go way far rather than I see what you're saying with the teenagers, you know, and some of these golfers might be. But as he's handing them the token back or, you know, their cash back, hey, please try to keep your golf balls on the driving range. Everybody knows what that means.
Sure.
You know, that there's wayward golf.
Sure, and we don't want to make this sound like we have a huge problem, because we don't. When we say there are kids that go down there and do that, you're talking maybe one in every 200.
Right.
So,
a reminder.
Sure.
Just a reminder to everybody.
I think we do have a huge problem. at least according to the Haars, they come over with a bucket full of balls that they picked up on the soccer field plus their yard. Now, I don't know how many came from the soccer field or how many they came from the yard, but they brought a bucket.
Sure. I've got a neighbor who lives on hole 16 and 17 who has garbage cans full.
So it's not a small problem.
Sure.
So,
I guess my point is we're open and we've got a lot more than just the driving range, but you're right, to this point.
But the driving range is the issue we're talking about because that's where we have someone that's complaining. So let's deal with that. And so to the extent that we can advise or tell the golfers that we need them to be careful, why don't we think of a way to do that?
Okay.
And if you want to come up with some language that you feel you know would work, bring that back to the council and let's talk about that and see if that's something that they want to do. I would be more happy if the golf staff were to say something in addition to a laminated piece that someone may or may not read.
Okay.
Any comments from any council members?
I know we talked a while ago about the option of, I'm not a golfer, so I'm not using the right terminology, but limiting the type of club they can use because you said that reduces the number of balls that go over. Is that off the table?
No. Because again, just what I did down there, any club really hit the right way can go over.
You go over that fence.
Yeah, any club hit the right way can go over.
Yeah.
So they can only use putters on driving.
They make it a miniature golf course.
I kind of like what the mayor is saying about it, and maybe if you can, at least my direction towards that is like just a little added effort to just say, you know, we've lost a lot of balls, and just try to focus your shots.
Yeah, no, and one of the other things that you mentioned last time too that we started to do when we have them. Obviously, we have marshals when it's peak season, so the marshals on their routes now spend time and they make a loop down there too. Yeah. That was one of the things you had mentioned too. So when we have them, they do that. And then they make their presence known down there, which is good.
You can see the kids they're sitting up there on the practice tee hitting balls.
Right. And we have put some signs up on the fences on the outside too, just saying no trespassers allowed because that was an issue they were coming off of there.
I don't want to make the message super long and you guys can figure it out, but I also think adding some of that human element too, I mean, making them aware there's kids in that park and you could hit one of them.
Yeah.
I know if somebody told me that, I would be super careful, extra careful.
Well, and again, going back to my own experience, I admit I hit a couple over there.
Okay.
And so in my mind, that's kind of what sunk in my bottom of my stomach.
Greg, thank you very much.
Where did they land? Did they actually hit the grass?
No. You got to crush it to do that. It hits the road. That's why I think the car comes into play a little bit right there.
To hit one into that park, you really have to.
The only way you really could do is hit that road, and just the force just takes off.
And were yours coming at all close to the Haars home, or were they farther down the road?
Farther, But again, I think those nets that we put up originally are so far back, and hindsight, we probably should have done further ones up. They're just so close that if you turn it the right way, you could go towards their house.
And did you get a quote for extending our own nets?
Yeah. So they are.
So we're going to be bringing this back up in council meeting. I do need to give you guys a break.
I'll get that later.
Okay.
Right. Let's take a break. We're going to come back in approximately 6 minutes. Okay.